Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I would make a motion to bring back on the table the Pollock motion that was tabled earlier.
Is there a second? Seconded by Doug Grout. All those in favor, raise your hand. Unanimous, 16. 15, sorry, 15. Okay. We were previously debating how to react to the letter we received from the service concerning the status of Pollock. Had discussion with the committee chair and staff on some possible courses of action, and either Rip or Tom want to outline those for the council's information. I think that would be helpful.
Tom, if you could. I'm trying to think here on the fly. I'm wondering if we should do them all or do our preferred. I mean, the one that we discussed that seems to work. Let's do the latter, what we thought would work.
Well, the option that we thought might work the best would be if the council includes a rebuilding trajectory for Pollock or options, you know, in this document. Adopts that today and puts it in. We have one effort control alternative that meets the objectives there, or at least we think we do, and we suspect that the other two will fall short, but not by a lot. Note that in the document when we take that out to the public, and then in the meantime, between now and the June council meeting, work on improving those two alternatives so that they do meet the Pollock objective. And then taking into account that comments probably from the service are going to be that these two options don't meet the objectives, responding to receiving those comments by, if we choose either of those two alternatives, modifying those alternatives in the final decision if those are selected, and going forward from there. Now, the advantage to that is that, first, it puts the public on notice and adopts a rebuilding program for Pollock in Amendment 16. It gives us some time to work on fleshing out or making the necessary modifications, if there are any, to those two alternatives so we know what needs to be done to modify that. The disadvantage of it, I think, is that you're not going out to the public with three alternatives that can be easily compared to each other, because two of them don't really meet, or we don't think they'll meet, the objective for Pollock rebuilding. And so, you know, we'll have to be very clear in the document to the public that says these two alternatives will need modification in order to achieve the Pollock mortality objective. So, you know, it could be a little bit confusing for the public with that respect. As I mentioned, it's somewhat similar to some of the language that was in Amendment 13 back in 2003, but not identical.
Okay, so that's the suggestion from myself and staff. Discussion, Jim Odlin?
Yeah, I guess I support that idea. I don't know what else we could do. Does this motion get that? I mean, it's all. Does that get us all that he just said?
Yeah, I think what it, and Tom can correct me if I'm wrong, but I think what it comes down to is how it's structured in the document when it goes out to the public.
Right. Yes. I mean, I think this in particular gets to the part about adopting a Pollock rebuilding program. And my suspicion is that what we'll write into the document is we'll write in two rebuilding programs, one that rebuilds by 2020 and one that rebuilds by 2017, which gives the council options down the road. If they choose to choose a more precautionary rebuilding program, they can. And the reason I picked that 2017 year is I'm pretty sure that's the year that the council picked for Witch Flounder and Georges Bank Winter Flounder. And so there'd be some similarities there rather than just to pick another random date. And the council could choose. We've done some of those preliminary calculations. They don't give a very different change in exploitation, which is a little surprising. But they give similar numbers. So, you know, if you have alternatives that meet the 2020, they're going to be pretty close to meet the 2017, too.
Terry Stockwell.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. All things considered, this seems like a reasonable way forward, and I would support this motion.
Anyone else on the council? Dr. Pierce.
Yeah, I guess I can support it primarily because of what was told to us this morning by Jim, that the Northeast Fishery Science Center is going to be putting some time into Pollock to get us away from reliance on the bottom trawl survey as a way to determine if we're rebuilding and to what target. Because as it stands right now, we've got the Bigelow and no guarantee there'll be some calibration numbers to get us into a position where we can use the Bigelow information. So with that bit of optimism that I've taken from Jim, I'll support this.
Dave Gaethel.
Yeah, just want to make sure what we're talking about here is the options for the non-sector vessels that will apply to those three options. Some kind of statement will be made about Pollock vis-a-vis those three options and how they might have to be modified further to account for Pollock. Is that the... I just want to make sure we're clear here.
I'm sorry, Dave, I was talking to Doug.
Yeah, I know. Is what we're going to do here then is take the three options we have for the non-sector vessels and basically say that... you're going to do an analysis of those three options, see how close they get you to where you need to be, and say that we may need additional modification of these three options. Let the public know we may need additional modification of these three options to meet the Pollock mortality objectives. Is that correct?
Yes.
Okay. And for recreational, what are we going to do? Same thing. Say that we may institute a bag limit or whatever.
I haven't really thought of the recreational one. The reason is the recreational catch in federal waters amounts to less than 5% of the pollock catch. Okay, it amounts to a very small part of the pollock catch. We've got in the document the idea that for a commercial recreational allocation, if it's less than 5%, we're not going to have a separate allocation. So I'm not quite sure what we'll do with the recreational. The recreational pollock catch in federal waters is something like 2 or 3% of the total pollock removals. I think the total recreational pollock harvest is on the order of 6%. And I can only report what the data says. The data says that 65% of that is coming from state waters. So... you know, over half, it says over half the recreational pollock catch comes from state waters.
I'm just curious to see those, Murphis strikes again here. In our area, the pollock catches on the Chatterhead boats in the fall are substantial, on the order of thousands of pounds day after day. Now, granted, that's been relatively recent in the last 5 years. It's been going up steadily. They've had tremendous fishing in the closed areas in the fall. So it may be when you look at data that's more recent, that number may change, but that number sounds low off the top of my head. So, you know, I think we ought to at least be aware that we may have to set, include that in our allocation scheme now, Pollock, and also, you know, some kind of ACL and accountability measures for the recreational fleet.
Anyone else on the council? Anyone in the audience? Back to the council. Ready for the question? All those in favor, raise your hand. Unanimous. Rip, any other issues?
Tom, we have the outstanding items from the regional administrator's letter.
Yes, I'm not quite sure how the chair wants to proceed, whether you want to work through those. I saw a bunch of other hands start to pop up, so I'm not quite sure which ones you want to take first. Or
we'll go through the RA letter.
Okay. I think where we left off on the RA letter was on page 3, section 4.3.3.9. I'm looking for the page now. It's probably about page 90 or somewhere thereabouts. I'm sorry, 88. I don't know if you want me to explain it or if it'd be quicker to have the service explain their comments.
If the service wouldn't mind.
The looking specifically at paragraph 2 here in 4.3.3.9, or starting with that anyway, our reading of this is that it creates an awful lot of problems with things that maybe aren't that easy to think through until you actually have to implement it. For example, this seems to assume that the constitution of the sectors doesn't change from year to year. And if it does change, then it makes this much more complicated. There's also the possibility that once you reallocate some of the ACE to the sectors as a result of trying not to penalize them for other overages, you could end up with things actually adding to more than 100. It doesn't seem to work with the common pool overages the way they're laid out in here, or at least some of the options that are in here, because there aren't deductions as a result of those overages. So the bottom line is we certainly understand the intent and would suggest the alternative that's in the letter that basically goes back to the way we do it now for the two sectors that we have. So we're suggesting substituting this for keeping status quo, I guess, with respect to what you do in the situation when other sectors or common pool vessels exceed their TACs. Does that help?
Yeah. Comment from the council?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. For discussion purposes, I would put out a motion that we, in terms of the language in paragraph 2 of 4.3.3.9, that we leave the language that as status quo. Change that to the existing language.
Is there a second? Seconded by Jim Fair. Jim Otto.
Just to me, in a quick reading on the face of it, it seems to accomplish what we really were trying to do, so I think I can support this motion.
Dave Good.
Yeah. If I was the Affleck duck, I'd be going, ah! I mean, I'm sorry, I don't get the paragraph rewrote, and I don't really get the paragraphs that are suggested for substitution. Maybe it's the hour, but I'm having a hard time here. I understand the argument, I think. I'm just not sure what the fix is. Maybe if you could run through the fix again, I'd understand it better.
Sorry. The fix is to simply put in the, or to keep the language that's currently in the regulations that says, if the hard tack allocated to a sector is not exceeded, the sector's allocation of tack will not be reduced for the following fishing year as a result of overages by non-compliant sectors or non-sector vessels.
Somnese.
The only thing I got to say is the second paragraph, I think, is identical to the paragraph in Amendment 13 that the current regulation is based on or interprets. I don't think the second paragraph is any change from what's in Amendment 13. I'm looking at Amendment 13 right now, and not to say that the regulation may not be more clear, I'm just saying that the current regulation was written to implement this paragraph.
Well, if that's true, I think Tom, you know, the fact of the matter is that we went to write the regulations for Amendment 13. There were a lot of things that we had to work through to actually interpret what the council's intent was. And so I'm suggesting that this paragraph is going to be one of those if we don't revise it now.
Council. Jim Oslo.
Just for a better, clearer motion, I would think we should be a little more clear and say the existing language in Amendment 13 final rule at 50 CFR 648.87B18. I think it would be a lot clearer.
For me.
Second or agree? Okay. Tom Neese.
I got some questions about the regulatory language here, and I just want to make sure that they're covered. In the extreme case, as it's pointed out in the language that was in Amendment 13 that was copied over here, in the extreme case, it's possible that an overage or a declining stock size could mean that a sector's allocation has to decline, even if nobody else went over. Even if no one went over, your share may not change, but your actual poundage may change because the stock is declining. So I just want to make it clear here that the sector's allocation of TAC will not be reduced. Does that refer to the sector's pounds, or does that refer to the sector's percentage? If it refers to the sector's think that way for a minute. If it refers to the sector's percentage, then you're okay, you think, right? But now think for a minute and say, okay, what if somebody goes over? Sector's percentage doesn't change, but because somebody else went over, does their poundage change? I mean, the confusing paragraph in Amendment 13 is confusing for a reason. It's because when you start to think through these different options, it becomes difficult to figure out exactly, you know, what is going to happen here.
Well, I don't actually think that's an issue. In the example that you gave, what this says is that the sector's allocation of TAC will not be reduced as a result of an overage by another sector. So it could, you're right, a sector's allocation of TAC could be reduced as a result of a reduction in the stock, for example. But this is specific to the situation of a sector not being penalized by somebody else exceeding their TAC or their allocation.
Council? Jim Oslin.
I still think the language needs to be a little more perfected. It says change the existing language in the Amendment 13 final document. I think we need to change this section to reflect, we're trying to change the language to reflect the language in Amendment 13. Oh, she fixed it. Okay. I'm still not there. Somebody else take a look at it. See if Mark, it reads right. It does.
Just okay. Change it to read that paragraph 2, section 4.3.3.9, be changed to the existing language. In Amendment 16. Oh, wait. That's fine.
I think that does it too, right? Okay.
What's that, Jim?
Yeah.
Council? Anyone in the audience? Eric?
Thank you very much, Mr. Chairman. Eric Brazier. I just had a question. I actually wanted to make a comment and then ask a question. I believe that in her summary of the language, the regional administrator inadvertently left out an important point, and that point being that the sector's allocation of TAC will not be reduced for the following fishing year as a result of an overage of a hard TAC by non-compliant sectors or non-sector vessels. And actually, I have two questions. One, would this just apply for the following fishing year? Is it a one-year situation? And number two, what if the common pool does not have a hard tack? Right now, there is an option that would not put a hard tack on the common pool. So if the common pool exceeded whatever tack, soft tack limit they have, would that apply in this situation as well? Thank you.
I think that's a good question. The intent is not to change. We were trying to simplify this. Obviously, that's hard to do with a complex issue like this. The intent is not to change, or we were not trying to change the intent of this, but I do think we'll have to be mindful of when we choose the final alternatives for all of the sectors, whether or not this covers them all, basically.
Dave Gaethel.
If you remove the last hard in the sentence, would that solve Eric's question? In other words, just say TACs by non-compliant sectors or non-sector vessels. I mean, we still set TACs, whether they're soft or hard. So I would suggest you remove that last hard, and maybe we're there.
Second, I agree. Okay.
Council, you ready for the question? All those in favor, raise your hand. Unanimous. Next.
The next issue under this section, I think, is just a clarification. And by the way, it should, and that I'm looking at the second bullet under 4.3.3.9, second solid bullet. It should say in paragraph 3 of this section. So it's referring to paragraph 3 in the same section that we've been looking at. And I just want to, we wanted to clarify, it says the sector share can be permanently reduced as a penalty. Is that an enforcement penalty or some type of administrative penalty? And if it's an enforcement penalty, then... Or either way, I think we just need to be clear here. If it's some type of administrative penalty, then we also need to be more specific about exactly how the penalties are applied.
Tom Neese.
Well, when this section was written, the intent, and perhaps it's not clear, was that to make it clear that repeated overages could be subject to penalties through the enforcement process, much like you can have your days at sea allocation reduced for a violation. We just wanted to make that clear. So, you know, a sector that has a repeated overage could either, A, not be authorized to operate anymore, the service may decide that their operations plan isn't sufficient, or B, you know, they could be penalized through the enforcement process with a loss of ACE. But perhaps at least adding that word in there, an enforcement penalty, might make that more clear.
We were on the third paragraph of page 88. There was a question as to whether and what was intended by that language, enforcement action. Right in the document. So now we're waiting for Pat to bring up her next issue from her letter.
Okay. I think the next item in the letter, 4.3.7. Is just a comment to the council, nothing the council would need to take action on. The one following that, section 4.4.2.2, which is on page, find that. Page 106, and I'm not clear whether this requires a council action or not, so I seek your advice on that. The way that the differential days at sea are proposed to be counted in here, it would charge days at sea at the higher rate when VMS positions are between the two differential days at sea areas, and that's extremely difficult for us to do. So we're proposing that days at sea between differential days at sea areas are charged the way that they are currently charged. I don't know if this wasn't a council action. I mean, maybe just be something we can agree in.
Jimmy,
just a question. So. Yeah, what you're talking about here as far as the current method of charging days at sea, and this reference would be the way you're doing it in southern New England now in the 241 area?
As written, the document suggests that the VMS currently works as your first position into an area and your first position out of the area. That's how you're charged. This proposes to suggest that the two positions in between an area, say you went from a 2-to-1 to a 1-to-1, we would evaluate the days at sea charge between those two positions and charge the higher rate. We can do it. It basically means evaluating every positional ping inside and outside of an area and then retrospectively applying the higher rate for that 1 hour that's in between those two pings.
I understand that, but I'm just asking if you're recommending that we propose the language referenced above and be replaced with the current method of charging days at sea. My question is, the current method of charging days at sea and differential counting, would that be the same as the way we're doing it now in southern New England when you're in and out of the area? If that's the case, then I it's okay. Right. So it would be the same way we're doing it in, okay.
Tom?
I think I'm I'm a little confused here because I thought in the Gulf of Maine you had to declare into the differential day at sea area, and then your whole time on the trip was charged at the rate for the differential day at sea area. So, I mean, I think Jim's point is he wants to make sure that what we're talking about is the current way we charge it for southern New England and not, or maybe he wants it to be the way in Gulf of Maine, but anyway, just to be clear which way we're talking about.
I think the intent was this measure in the document is a little bit different from how we currently do it. The VMS takes your first position in the area, takes first position out, and attributes a charge to that. That's what we're advocating. So if you did your first position into the 2-to-1 area would start your 2-to-1 clock. Your first position out of the 2-to-1 area would stop your 2-to-1 clock. And then any subsequent positions would be based upon, or rates would be based upon the rate in that area. Did I make, was that a little bit clear?
All right, thank you.
That's not what it says in the document, right? Or does it, Tom?
No, that's not what the document says. I mean, I think if the council wants it to say that, we need to at least get everyone to say, okay, we agree, that's the way we want to count it.
Right.
Just so that there's something on the tape anyway.
That's where I was going.
Okay.
In fact, I think we should actually have a motion. Somebody would like to make a motion.
I move that the days at sea counting rate be based on the first position in the differential days at sea counting area and the first position out of the days at sea counting area. Is that?
Seconded by Jim Odlin. That's for option 2A? Karen, I think if you could put option 2A, section 4.4.2.2. Thanks. Made by Pat Kirkle, seconded by Jim Odlin. Discussion? Rodney.
Just so I can be clear, that's for both the Gulf of Maine and Southern New England. They'll both be the same.
Yes. Okay. Anything further? Anyone in the audience? Back to the council. Ready for the question? All those in favor, raise your hand. Six. 16. Unanimous.
We covered the next issue already, so it would be down to, again, it's still on page 4 in the letter, 4.4.7.1.1. I think, again, this is just a question for clarification. Right now the tables in the document seem to imply that we would be monitoring tax for the stocks that have a zero retention limit, And we don't see any purpose to that, creates an administrative burden without without necessarily any regulatory requirement associated with it. So we just want to make sure that the council was in agreement with that.
So you're just basically telling the council that you're not going to monitor stocks for which there's a zero retention limit?
Yes, this is the option that has to do with the trimester tax as an accountability measure. And yes, we're saying that there's no reason to monitor the tax for the species with zero retention limit. So we'd like to see them removed from the table listing those tax.
Is there any objection to that? Seeing none.
Okay, I'm on to, I think the next one is a comment. Then section 4.4.7.1.2, option 2A, differential days at sea counting AM. And that's on page, let's see, should be around, yeah, right, exactly. 128. It says that in March, we'll estimate total catch based on 10 months of catch data. Using the information, we'll adjust days at sea counting for the following fishing year based on whether the ACLs are exceeded or not. I'm suggesting we change that to in February with available data, we'll project whether or not the ACLs have been exceeded. March doesn't leave enough time to implement something for the next fishing year. And there's no guarantee that we'll have 10 months of catch data at that point. So I think this provides more flexibility, but that the still preserves the intent of the council. And I can make that as a motion if you'd like. Okay. I move that the language in paragraph 1 of section 4.4.7.1.2 be replaced to say in February with available catch data, National Marine Fisheries Service will adjust days at sea counting for the following fishing year based on whether ACLs are exceeded or not. Do you want me to read it again? Okay. It says, following fishing year based on whether ACLs are exceeded or not.
Is there a second? Seconded by Jim Odlin. Discussion? Seems pretty straightforward. Ready for the question? All those in favor, please raise your hand. Unanimous. 16, unanimous.
I'm on to I think we've covered the other items up to page 6. Toward the bottom of the page, section 6.2.3.1, commercial fishery measures. This is, I guess, a comment more than anything, that the options don't seem to achieve the needed mortality reductions for southern New England winter flounder or northern windowpane flounder. And option 2A doesn't meet the mortality reductions for which flounder. So something for the council to keep take into consideration as they finalize the measures for this. And I think right. And then there were a couple of sections. I think this may just be an inadvertent omission that ocean pout wasn't listed as a prohibited species in some of the options. Then finally, I think we've included the pages 8, 9, and 10. We think those are just clarifications to the text, and it wouldn't require any council action. So that would cover our issues, Mr. Chairman. Thank you.
Rip, do you have anything else on the groundfish?
Only the final motion.
Okay. Before we go there, council members have any motions they'd like to bring forward? Doug?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Karen, I believe I have a motion that I'd like to bring up in response to Pat's comment on the recreational accountability measures. I would like to propose a third option, and I'd like to move that under section 4.4.7.2, inclusion of an option 3 that is similar to option 1, with the exception that the second sentence in paragraph 2 is replaced with the following sentence. If the catch exceeds the ACL, NIMS will determine the measures necessary to prevent exceeding the ACL following consultation with the council and publish the accountability measure that would be put into effect using procedures consistent with the APA. I would just like to have an option here that NIMS feels is approvable where there be some kind of consultation with the council.
Is there a second? Seconded by Dave Preble. Discussion? Jim Odlin?
I just have a question on the text, in that NIMS will determine that the measures necessary to prevent from exceeding the ACL. First, if the ACL is exceeded, then you're going to determine whether the ACL is going to be exceeded. The following, what I'm asking is, I guess, is you'll determine the measures necessary to prevent the ACL from being exceeding when? You need to add something there.
You're right. Unfortunately, that same flaw is in option 2. Yeah. Here's my hesitation here in putting a specific year. I would say in future years at this point, but given the time frame when we have a fishing year, which is May through April, correct? And the time frame in which you get data from MRIP
that you can analyze this, you're really looking 2 years out, because you're not going to get data from Emirate until April at the earliest. And you're not going to get information from MRIP on March and April of the last 2 months of the fishing year until the following June or April or May. There's a disconnect here. So I think I'm just going to put it at prevent exceeding the ACL in future years, following consultation with the council. And maybe somebody has a different idea. But
second or agree? Yes. Paul Howard?
I thought how Pat described it this morning is at the end of the first year, which ends, say, April 31st, we'll get the recreational landings June, July, and then she'll do something with those to be in place during that second part of the second fishing year, the 2 year. So it's for the following year. So you look at the information. Might not be in place. That's why I said we got to do better than getting the data in July and then having proposed and final rule. You've lost 8 months. So there's got to be a better way to do it automatically.
But the issue is the June and July information you get is going to be up through December of the previous year. Are you thinking about using preliminary information?
I'm at this point, I'm assuming that the timing of MRIP will be similar to the timing of the old MRFs information. And we would have, that would be through wave two, right? Yeah, wave two, we would have that by July, May, June, July, August, or August.
If I might, that's preliminary information. It's not final information. It never has been.
I think regardless of that, this motion covers it because it's a future year or years. So this would cover however you guys work it out. So the motion would still be, and the wording of the motion would still work for you.
Maybe not for Tom. Tom?
Well, yeah, the language of the motion may work. But to be clear, we were intending all along to use the data that's available in June and July to craft the ACE accountability measures. The only alternative to that is now you're talking about not implementing an accountability measure until 2 years after an overage, in which case your response is that your uncertainty becomes much larger and you reduce your ACL considerably.
Doug?
No, that's fine. There's uncertainty with the preliminary information, too, so you'd have to take that into consideration. It depends on where you want to take your uncertainty from.
Anything further from the council? This adds an additional alternative or option. Ready for the question? All those in favor, raise your hand. Sixteen. Unanimous. Anything further on Amendment 16 from council? Sally?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I have a motion that I'd like to offer related to Section 4.4.7, accountability measures, and specific to the section related to accountability measures for common pool vessels. The committee at its last meeting discussed and did not bring forward a preferred alternative. A motion failed at the committee on one alternative, and therefore I'd like to make a motion to make another alternative the preferred. And therefore, I would move to make Section 4.4.7.1.1 the Council's preferred alternative for accountability measures for common pool vessels. And Karen, I'll just, if you could just take that second sentence off, that was related to the letter from National Marine Fisheries Service.
Is there a second? Seconded by Dave Preble. Discussion?
If I could, I'd like to offer my rationale. This measure is fully compliant with the new MSA requirements for accountability measures. We've had a lot of discussion at the committee and the council about needing to make sure that a hard tack alternative does not result in a derby. And this alternative does have a number of measures that do just that. The regional administrator can reduce and more precisely define the geographic range of closed areas. Certain gear types can be allowed to continue fishing in an area if they effectively avoid the stock for which the area is closed. There's the ability for trip limits to be established and reduced as the tack is approached. And there's an allowance for carryover within the fishing year from trimester to trimester if the tack is not caught. So all those measures are included within this alternative to make sure that a derby is not the result. This alternative is consistent with the expressed council intent to move the groundfish fishery to output-based management, and it would avoid putting the fishery in the position, the very bad position that it's been for a long time, to have to pay back in subsequent years and essentially have to pay back interest. The other alternative to change the differential days at sea as an accountability measure is essentially like allowing the industry to use a credit card, paying back later, rather than using a debit card, paying as you go. If there's a way that we have to avoid allowing the fishery to get in that payback position, we need to do that. We have to move on. The council's expressed that moving to output-based management and with that move, a reduction in management uncertainty and jeopardy to the fishery is what the council wants to do, and making this the preferred alternative for the common pool vessels will do that. Thank you.
Just a point of order, Mr. Chairman. I think we passed a motion earlier specifically not to pick the preferred. That was a motion, and I think Dave Gaethel made the motion. And so I just would have to think that something like this, since we took that action earlier, has to be out of order.
No, Dave, you're right.
Tom Mace?
Yeah, I don't know if anybody heard what David said. You know, his motion was to picking a preferred alternative for the effort control measures. I don't think it was to not picking a preferred alternative for accountability measures.
Ed, Dave Preble and Dave Gaethel.
Thank you. I'll be very brief. I, because Sally basically said it all. The bottom line is that we want to move to an output-based system, and days at sea system where adjustments don't happen until the following year is just simply not compatible with sectors, and I'm afraid that allowing it to go that way. Will wind up in fact penalizing sectors if not in the first year on a continuing basis. And that's something I want to avoid. I want to keep us moving, as the council has stated its intent, moving toward an output-based system. I understand the problems with hard tax, but the trimester system that's built into this seems to get us around that as much as is possible. So I support this motion. Thank you.
Dave Gaethel.
Well, not surprisingly, I don't support this motion at all for a number of reasons. First of all, the trimesters in my area means the fishery will open, if it opens at all, in the first trimester, July 1st, which means it won't open at all probably, which means that we'll basically in New Hampshire be out of business before we even start. That's number one. Second of all, I don't use a debit card. I never have. I use a credit card once in a while, and I pay my bill. I would suggest that we either go with no preferred alternative to public hearing, or personally, I would pick option two if I was going anywhere, but I will not vote for this motion.
Dr. Paris.
Yeah, we've debated this issue often, and I believe we debated it at the last council meeting again. That is the merits of this particular accountability measure option, and I reluctantly agreed to put it in, bring it to public hearing. Let's get the comment on it. I don't agree with many of the arguments that were made by Sally regarding why this no longer provides for a derby fishery. It still is a derby fishery, but in the trimester mode. And frankly, for me to support this as a preferred alternative would put me, in all likelihood, in complete contrast to some of the earlier things I said this morning about the southern New England closed area, since, we have stock area closures as one of the elements of this particular strategy to ensure the TACs are not exceeded. Everybody gets shut down with the least common denominator. So that's not very attractive to me. Bring it at the public hearing. Let's get comment on it. And then later on we discuss what we want to do. But I just can't indicate that this is a preferred alternative.
Anyone else on the council? Mike Leary.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I oppose this motion also. We went around and around on the committee on this, and there wasn't much favor from the committee to pick the preferred alternative at all for the accountability measures, so I oppose this.
Anyone else on the council? Go to the audience. Dave Marciano.
Yeah, it's not a derby fishery. It's three derbies. We sit out the first one. What this is effectively is it's a bullet to the head to the fishermen and the families who will be fishing under Days at Sea. This shows nothing but utter contempt for human life. That first trimester, now we're going to have to take my 34-foot boat, which I'd rather fish, put in a long day close to shore. Now I'll have to travel outside the boundaries of my insurance policy to participate in the first trimester. That's simply unacceptable. You shouldn't even consider an option like this. You could, if you constructed the right Days at Sea program, have a hard tack under Days at Sea, but you really have to change course with how you're managing Days at Sea, and there doesn't seem to be a desire to fix what's broken, only throw it away. I participated in a lot of the committee meetings as best I could, but there seemed to be a bias against improvements on Days at Sea, only outlining the flaws in moving agendas forward to go to quotas. And this will be a great way to get a lot of people out of the fishery to make the transition to quotas simpler, because a lot of people are going to get hurt under this scenario. Thanks.
Mr. Libby?
Glenn Libby and Port Clyde. There seems to be a division starting. I guess we've seen it for a while between common pool and sectors. Dave was just talking about protections for the common pool, and I just want to make a comment about protections for the sectors based on some of the things that Tom was saying a while ago about how overages can add up it really is a choice which side you determine to be on. I mean, if you decide to be in a sector, that's a conscious choice. It's a lot of work. And there's other reasons for staying in the common pool. So I would just have to argue for something that protects the sectors from any, hopefully, no overages. But if something does happen and there's a really bad overage, with all the work that people are putting into the sectors, we really need to be protected from that. Thank you.
Okay, back to the council. Anything further? Doug Grout.
Since Dave and Sally and I crafted that motion at the previous council meeting about this council's desire to go move in the direction of a outputs-based system, I feel I have to say something concerning this, that I'm not going to support this motion because at this point I think we need to head in that direction, but we need to wean the common pool sector off of this and encourage them to go into sectors. But at this point, I don't think we need to put forward this as a preferred option.
So.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I hope that everyone has had a chance to take a look at the several pages that constitute this option. Since it's not strictly a hard tack alternative, though that is what it's entitled, there are a number of measures that are included in here to prevent the Derby fishery. And I understand that there's discussion and debate over whether those measures would, in fact, reduce or eliminate a potential Derby fishery. But there are important measures that have been developed over the last, and have been included in this section as Amendment 16 has been developed. Please take a close look before you vote on this, and understand that it's a robust alternative, and it's fully consistent with the message that the council has been sending over the past several years on the direction that this fishery needs to go. Thank you.
Anyone else in the council?
Dave Gaethel.
Yeah, I mean, in response to that, I could vote for this in a heartbeat if you remove the roll enclosures. It's that simple. You know, you got to put everybody on an even playing field here so that you can use your days when the trimester opens. You know, I mean, tie in some segments of the industries, both hands behind their back, tying an anchor to the foot and giving them a shove off the plank is not putting them on an even playing field. And that's what you're talking about here. You're talking about, in my area, probably not being able to fish in the first trimester. You won't be able to fish if it stays open any amount in the last trimester. And in the middle trimester, the weather's crappy for the last two-thirds of it, and the small boats a lot of times can't go. So when are they going to go? When are they going to use their lousy 20 days, 10 days, whatever they end up with? You know, this is just plain getting out of control here. It's out of hand. The whole thing has gone insane. At least the second alternative has a ratcheting down with increasing use of differential days at sea so people can decide how they want to use their days. I'm not saying that's my preferred alternative. I don't know what my preferred alternative is here. At some point, sometimes I think my preferred alternative is take the whole thing and shove it out the door, but I can't do that. But I can't support something that inherently puts the 20-odd boats that are left in New Hampshire, if there is even that many, out of business right out of the gate. You know, if you want to do that, fine, and Doug and I and Mike can go home because we won't have to be here anymore because we won't have anybody to represent. Thank you.
Terry?
The timing of the day and the disparity of the comments has convinced me that we're not ready to have a preferred alternative, and I move the question.
Ready for the question? All those in favor, raise your hand. Two. Opposed? Twelve. Abstentions? One. Two. Motion fails 2-12, two abstentions. Council members, with anything under Amendment 16, Dr. Pierce?
Yeah, one relatively small thing, but I think it's important, especially because it relates to the council policy that relates to sectors, a policy that we very seldom reference. It was developed quite a long time ago. I don't think it's noted in the amendment, but anyways, it exists, and one of those policies is near and dear to me, and it's about, I haven't got the policy in front of me, but it's something along the lines of not allowing sector vessels to redirect and increase their effort in catching other fisheries. Maybe it's not allow, but to at least be on top of it, to be aware of that possibility and to be concerned about it. So on page 85, I don't think I need a motion if everyone is willing to go along with it, and that is with the sector annual reports, there is a reference in the third line to the report having to include harvest levels of all species by sector vessels, landings and discards by gear type. I would like to have landings of all species, not just groundfish, but non-groundfish species as well, including the catch that would occur from state waters by all sector vessels. And that way we know where they are and what they're doing, and it gets reported to us on an annual basis. This is an extremely important aspect of sector management. What do they do when they're not fishing on groundfish? They go to something else. We're not saying you can't go to something else, because clearly they can. That's one of the attractive features of sectors. But we need to know where they are and what they're doing. So if there's no objection, I would like to just have that particular paragraph modified. There's a couple of places in there where there would just have to be a simple change of reporting of groundfish and non-groundfish by sector vessels.
Rip?
I was under the impression that we had had this exact same discussion, and in fact, because of your desire to do just what you're saying, was that we were talking about including harvest levels of all species. That included all species.
Well, if that's all right, fine. Because all species, I thought that meant groundfish species. So if you all right, I appreciate that clarification, Rip. That covers my concerns, and no need for further action.
Tom Nies.
I just also point out that earlier discussion added or proposes to add to the sector operations plan the requirement that the sector identify potential redirection of effort as a result of sector operations, which was, again, as a result of Dr. Pierce raising this concern earlier.
Covered, Dave. Covered twice. Pat Kirkle.
Thank you. I apologize, but I skipped over one thing in our memo that I thought we had covered earlier, but it's a slightly separate issue, and this has, again, to do with the scallop ACLs. Tom explained that the ACL itself was going to be set in the specification process, but there's also necessary to have an AM for the ACL, and I don't think there's anywhere in the document where it talks about AMs for the scallop fishery.
Well, I can give an answer to that. Whether the answer will be satisfactory or not, I am not exactly sure. We have discussed this actually at, I think, several of the groundfish committee meetings, and we discussed it at least one of the scallop committee meetings, and that was that we would set the ACLs in the groundfish FMP or Amendment 16, and that the AMs would be a part of the Amendment 15 to the scallop plan. When that was initially discussed, the reaction that we got was that was a doable way of handling it. At some point, and I don't know if it was our second or third discussion, there was an expression of some concern about it, and I think maybe that concern got even stronger. But it was not an error of omission. It was done by design because if we had to put the AMs into the groundfish plan, it would mean that we had to do an incredible amount of analysis that really was work that should be in the scallop plan. So that is where we are. We made a conscious decision, I believe it was done at the level of both committees, to go ahead in the direction that we had started.
Unfortunately, I don't think that's acceptable. When you have an ACL, you need an accountability measure to go with it. And to say that the accountability measure will come in a separate action further down the line, I don't see how we could argue that's consistent with the statutory requirements. So I think we need to think about how to do an AM for the scallop fishery. A possible option, and I don't know whether the committee talked about this or not, is instead of in this action actually setting an ACL for the scallop fishery or saying that there will be an ACL for the scallop fishery, considering it one of those components of the resource that's taken off the top so that you don't need an AM to go with the ACL.
Jim?
I was just looking at Tom to see if I thought that's what we were doing. But I may have missed this along the road somewhere.
No, you haven't missed it along the road. This has been a real challenging evolution here, okay, to put it mildly. Back when we originally thought we were going to take Amendment 16 out to the public in June for public hearing, we considered this issue of ACLs and ACL subcomponents. And at the time, the groundfish PDT, at the time, the advice from the service was that the AM should be in the groundfish plan. That's what we were hearing from George Darcy. And so we looked around and we said, there's no way we can get this done. We can't even develop the right ones because we know nothing about the scallop fishery or what the scallop fishery is going to be doing in the future. And so the groundfish PDT recommended that scallops be treated as an other subcomponent, you know, one of those things off to the right. So then we didn't take the amendment document out to the public in June. And let me see if I can find the ACL page here. So meanwhile, we started getting advice from the service that it was all right to put the AMs in the scallop plan and not in the groundfish plan. And we got that advice from the service as recently as the November scallop committee meeting, and we even got that advice from the service after the November council meeting. They were still telling us that it was okay to do the scallop AN and the scallop thing. And the council had passed a motion somewhere along the lines which said that in the instances, I think this might have been your motion, actually, in the instances where a subcomponent was catching more than 5%, we were going to take a look and evaluate it and make it an AM. So between the November and the council meeting and this council meeting, I spoke with the committee chairs and said, you know, is it consistent to put that into the AM side, I'm sorry, the ACL side of the table, rather than the other subcomponents side of the table. And so that's where it is right now. That's not where it was last fall. Okay. And if you look at page 66, you'll see that that's highlighted in that section in table 10 on page 66. Now, our our concern. My concern in particular, I guess, from the standpoint of trying to include AM, scallop committee AM, scallop fishery AMs in this action is not only the issue of how do you figure out what they are when you don't really know much about the scallop fishery or what the impact of an AM might be on shifts of scallop effort, but the problem of the analytic requirements that that imposes on this particular amendment, because we would then not only have to modify our affected environment to describe the scallop fishery, but we would have to describe or attempt to describe the impacts of this AM on the scallop plan. And, you know, frankly, I think that is impossible to do in the time frame we have. So I think the options, you know, the chair outlined one approach, which is you let the scallop committee continue to develop the AM and put it in the amendment, scallop amendment, which the RA says probably is not an acceptable approach. The RA's approach is that you move the shaded section back over to the right-hand side of the table, and you don't call these scallop yellowtail allotments an ACL yet. I don't know if there's a middle ground where you can put them in never-never land and say they're not an ACL until the scallop AM is developed by the scallop plan. I don't know if that's, you know, sleight of hand that we could get away with. Because I think eventually you're going to want these to be an ACL because you're going to want to have some kind of control over the scallop yellowtail bycatch. You know, I say that recognizing that the scallop industry has made great strides and continues to make great strides in reducing yellowtail bycatch. So it's a little unclear to me, you know, how big a problem this is going to be in the future. I think those are the options. There's actually a fourth option, but I won't throw that one on the table. I think we've got enough to talk about for a while.
Pat?
That may be a potential option. It's just saying in here that it's a subcomponent. It's considered to be a subcomponent until such time as an AM is implemented through the scallop FMP, and then it becomes an ACL. Alternatively, you could move it to the subcomponent column and say, and then in the scallop FMP, implement both the ACL and the AM. I'm not sure there's much difference between those two options. But I think one way or the other, unless we can do an AM here today, we're going to have to move it to the subcomponent column.
Jim Allen.
Yeah, I'll make a motion that we move the scallop category from over to the subcomponent category pending development of AMs in the scallop FMP.
Second. Seconded by Rip Cunningham. Anyone wishing to speak against that motion? Anyone in the audience wishing to speak against that motion? Back to the council. Well, Paul Howard.
Thanks, Mr. Chairman. I think that we ought to be thinking about the type of motion we want to make to the scallop committee tomorrow to address their amendment, and they can amend, you know, the just by simply saying, and this becomes an ACL and an AM, that if amendment 16 sets the 10%, which it should, whatever the, it's 10%, right, yellowtail, if they set the 10%, then we ought to say, you know, right away, because it's 2 years down the road, that the make a motion to task the scallop committee tomorrow to do ACLs and AMs for that 10%. Otherwise, you know, I don't know when they'll do it. So.
Okay, so the motion's finally perfected on the board. Anyone wishing to speak against the motion? Paul Howard.
Are you gonna do it in the amendment they're working on with ACLs and AMs? Be more specific than you wouldn't have to redo this whole thing tomorrow if you do it now. I forget what amendment.
Yeah, I'd prefer this to be the motion because this is what's in this document. That motion can be a standalone motion that we do tomorrow for the scallop FMP and doesn't have to be involved in this document. So I think for now this motion should be as written. Thank you.
Ready for the question? All those in favor, raise your hand. Opposed? Abstentions? One abstention. The motion carries 15-0, one abstention. Anything else under Amendment 16? I got hands everywhere. Tom? You'll go last. Doug?
Just a brief clarification, Mr. Chairman. Jim had brought up the question under the accountability measure option 3 about how when the ACL is going to be implemented and we put in future years. I think we need to apply that same wording to option 2, second sentence of the second paragraph. And I don't know if we can just do that by consensus since we put it in option 3 and leave it at that, just so it's clarified that that needs to be added in.
You're talking about how it functionally will work. It doesn't matter what option it is, right? It's only going to work as fast as it's going to work.
Essentially.
Yeah.
You know, Jim had asked that that be put into the motion when it was, and that wording I had gotten exactly out of option 2 with my modification, and we just need to make sure that in option 2 we add in necessary to prevent the exceeding the ACL in future years. The word in future years needs to be added in.
Does the council understand that? Is there an objection to incorporating that language? I'm going to come to Tom in a second, but incorporating that language in the alternatives under that section. Tom?
I'm a little, I don't know if Karen could put that motion back up on the board, the one that Doug made a little while ago. I just want to make sure I understand what's meant by future years. That's just to make clear that the REC AM is not an in-season adjustment. Is that the goal? Okay.
We're all set there. Okay. Rip?
No, I wanted to go last.
Okay. You get Trump, Tom.
You know, I hate to go back to the NIMS letter, but I'm going to go back to the NIMS letter. I was a little confused. The back two pages, pages 8 and 9, Pat mentioned that these were things that would clarify the Amendment 16. And we didn't really talk about these, so I'm assuming that I'm really not taking action on these. Because some of these things here, you know, I can look at. The first one I think we did take action on, the one about administrative processing for setting ACLs. But there's some in here that, you know, you look at them and you say, okay, these might just be a question of editing, and that's pretty minor. But there are some others in here that it's not clear to me that I can really act on. For example, you know, if you look at the bottom of the one on the bottom of page 8, says the council needs to further refine the options under this section to facilitate meaningful public input. In a couple of these particular options, it says we might change the leasing tax. It doesn't say to what. Well, you know, I can't just put something in there. But so since we didn't really have any substantive discussion on most of these sections here, they wouldn't necessarily impact any changes in the document. Just want to make sure that's clear to everybody. The one exception I think that I can think of, or at least one exception I can think of, is one where on page 9 where it talks about the hand gear B vessel, I rounded the trip limit down rather than rounding it up, which is what the regulations say to do. So I can fix that. That's pretty minor. And there might be some other things like editing the description of monkfish category C and B boats so it's a little more clear. But there are some other pieces in here that I'm not sure you really want staff designing alternatives for you at this late a date without any council opportunity to review it.
Thanks, Tom. Pat?
Well, I certainly agree with Tom, but I think our reading of these is that they may be editorial, and if they're not, then I agree that we have to talk about them. I'm looking at the one you pointed out, for example, 4.3.6, which is on page 96, and what the text says is the council will consider changing or eliminating the conservation tax on days at sea transfers. And our point is, what is the council proposing? Go ahead.
Tom.
I think that one might be easy because I think there's a motion from the committee that says we're going to eliminate it. So that particular one. But option 3, we'll consider setting a tax that's the same as the transfer program. I guess that means eliminate or not eliminate. Option 4, the days at sea transfer program, conservation tax exemption, window holiday, whatever you want to call it. The council and the committee never did define dates for it. And, I'm not sure if you just want me to throw in some period there for how long that would be open. That's not a preferred alternative, I'll point out.
I'm not worried about the language in option 4, if that's what you're... it doesn't have a... It says it will be limited to a specific time period. The time period considered for this exemption is between 3 months and one fishing year. So I think that provides enough information for the public to comment.
Unfortunately, don't have the benefit or haven't had the benefit of having this letter for a period of time so that we could digest all of this. And it is what it is, but...
Well, we didn't have the document for a period of time so we could write the letter.
Right. So, if individual council members see items on page 8 or 9 that they'd like to address, it's one suggestion I have on how to get through this. Okay, unless somebody wants to make a specific recommendation on the items on page 8 or 9, I don't care to sit here all night. Pat Kirkle.
Yeah, my suggestion is that we work with Tom to try to put in as much detail as we possibly can with the understanding that there may be areas where we weren't able to provide sufficient information and that might affect the council's ability to adopt options at the final rule stage. But I think if we work through the specifics to the extent that we can with the committee motions, that we should be able to clear up a lot of this.
Okay. That sounds like a reasonable course of action. Any objection? Okay. Anything else under Amendment 16? Rip?
I get the last word?
I don't see any other hands.
I would like to make a motion that the council approve taking Amendment 16 out to public hearing.
Is there a second? Seconded by Jim Fair. Discussion? Ready for the question? All those in favor, raise your hand. Sixteen. Unanimous. Anything else on the ground fish? Jim Odlin.
How long did that take, Tom? How many years
was that?
To get Amendment 16 out to public hearing.
It hasn't left yet.
Comedian.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. I just have a quick follow-up concerning the resubmission of the interim action comments. And it would, at your discretion, perhaps either without objection or I can make a motion that we task the PDT to compile all available data and analysis that support the council's proposed interim action comments for inclusion with a resubmission. I don't.
Say that one more time, Terry.
Good morning. that we task the PDT to compile all available data and analysis that support the council's proposed interim action comments for inclusion with a resubmission. Well, we can drop the letter back in the hopper, but I mean, I know that the PDT has done a significant amount of work that, you know, if there's that might well support our comments, and if it's available, if there's data and analysis available support the comments, you know, I think it'd be prudent to send them along. Otherwise, it's another letter to the agency.
Doug?
Yeah, I would agree with that. What available information there is to support our comments would be good to have, anything that you have available at this point.
Tom?
Yeah, there's no illusions here. I don't have anything available. I mean, this option was not developed by the PDT. It was sent off to the service. The PDT, as a PDT, didn't analyze it. There are members of the PDT, no doubt, who did the work that led to the comments in the regional law, in the proposed interim rule that says it doesn't work. So it's I'm not sure what you're expecting us to put together. We don't have anything together right now that supports the interim action. There's nothing I can go and pull off the shelf and say it supports it. Yeah, it wouldn't be much of an attachment.
Any further comment? Pat?
I'm concerned that this is a request to the PDT. The PDT's two things. The PDT has enough to do right now, frankly, and as Tom points, a big portion of the PDT are the folks that did the analysis for the interim action, and it's not appropriate for them to be working on the council's comments on our interim action. So if anything, this should say ask the staff, but I'm going to oppose the motion anyway.
Okay, anything else? Okay, see you here bright and early at 8:30.